Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome to the Quarantine Break Podcast. Today's guest is Rufus Jones, creator and star of the brilliant Channel 4 comedy Home. I've been a huge fan of Home ever since it first hit our screens in March 2019. The second series, released earlier this year, was even better. And what better time to catch up on both series on all four right now. Alongside Home, Rufus has appeared in Camping, W1A, Inside Number 9, Flack, Hunderby, Stan and Ollie, The Casual Vacancy, Flying Circus, and loads more. I loved chatting to Rufus. He's such an easy guy to get along with. We chatted about possibilities for Series 3 of Home and its American version with Ben Stiller, plus what he's been watching and doing. Here it comes, and I'll see you again at the end. Hello, Rufus. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hello, Simon. How are you?
I'm very, very well. The first question, of course, I have to ask you, and I am going to sound like an elderly relative here. Are you well? Are you feeling healthy?
I am feeling healthy. I am. We're all good. My partner and I have four-year-old twins. We're all good. We're all pretty housebound. I've just taken them for the sort of obligatory sort of hour out in a park outside, directly outside our house. And we've run around, and now we're sort of indoors for the rest of the day. So, you know, Disney Plus becomes our sort of nanny, basically. I bought Disney Plus about 3 weeks ago. And looking back, it's kind of the most amazing launch Disney Plus could possibly have had.
Yes,
coronavirus, because I think suddenly people are realizing what we need, whether for our children or for ourselves, is basically the Disney collection, you know, to keep us sane and optimistic. So that's our sort of midwife at the moment, Disney Plus.
I mean, it's good to hear that you're all well. When you were out in the park, were you keeping your Osmonds? Keeping your Osmonds. You have to keep 6 feet. Richard Osmond is 6 feet.
Keeping our Osmonds. Funnily enough, in our house, it's keeping our merchants. But I accept that Osmond is kind of metric imperial, you know, Osmond merchant. But yes, we are. Do you know, I live in Brighton, and down here, everyone, I think, has been quite well behaved, certainly in the parks. There's quite a police presence as well. So, you know, people aren't being too naughty, and 2 meters feels about right, and no one's sunbathing, you know. But I think on the beach, it's a different scene. I think on the beach, you get the nutters who are sort of barbecuing and stuff, and you see that on the 10 o'clock news, and that's a bit odd. But hopefully I think the news is sort of slowly getting through. So, in all honesty, even on a day like this, which is glorious, the park was pretty sparse. It's just parents of kids, basically.
So the idea of this podcast is to take a little tea break from the world, which I think is probably needed at the moment.
Yeah. Tea break stroke happy hour, I think. Yeah.
Yes. Well, it's always happy hour now.
It is. Yeah.
I don't see any issue in sort of starting a gin and tonic around 11.
No, you know, no. I think right now, whatever gets you through the day is pretty much legit, you know.
You've got a mug of tea at the moment.
You think it's tea? So naive, Simon. So naive.
What tea do you have? Any particular
plan? You know, I've got to let you into a deep and dastardly secret. I hate tea.
No.
I hate tea. I'm the only Englishman, I think, alive who hates tea. I don't know where this came from, but it revolts me. And that's not too strong a word. I don't want to hate, you know, allow daylight in upon magic. But yeah, I love coffee, however. Coffee's my thing. Mm. But unfortunately, I drink coffee like I drink tea. So by the end of the day, I'm sort of wired and exhausted. No one could go near me. So I should like tea, but sadly, it's just a blind spot for me.
That's very strange.
I know. Yeah. Should we wrap it up now?
I think so. I mean, it's been lovely to have you on.
Yeah.
we're using FaceTime today. The thing on video apps at the moment that's giving me life, just before a call ends, you say goodbye to the person. As the person looks for the hang up button, their smile suddenly disappears and you see their true self.
Yes, I know. It makes us realize how American we all are, because we all kind of plaster on the smile and then... yes, you're right. As you press off, sort of normal service resumes, and you see the clown mask slip. Then, yeah.
And are you doing this sort of stuff regularly? Are you going on Zoom drinks with friends? Are you doing pub quizzes?
Yeah, I did that on Saturday. Actually, I had a really nice. I was quite cynical about it at first, but I had a kind of four-way Zoom booze up with a couple of my friends. Another actor called Rufus, bizarrely enough. Pretty much anyone called Rufus is an actor. That's comes with the territory. And a guy called Joel Morris, who's one half of the team that wrote the Ladybird books, the famous Ladybird books you see everywhere. And we all sort of, Joel organized it, and we had a roaring time. It was actually a lot more natural than I thought it would be, oddly. But then I had a business, a kind of work Zoom sort of meeting with the BBC sort of heads of comedy for a project, which went very well. But to actually be quite formal and sort of have a businessy meeting on Zoom, which is what it's built for, apparently, is almost impossible. I find the sort of the inter, especially when you have multiple voices as you do on business meetings, the multiple voices and the lag time, everyone interrupting each other mid flow. It was just, it's no way to do anything or pitch anything, but I think we got away with it in that instant, but I won't miss it once we're back to normal life.
I mean, it does feel more built for those social things. I guess the only issue is you can't really say no to social things at the moment. No, I'm off to the theatre, I'm out for dinner. Those things don't exist anymore.
All the excuses that used to sort of be prevalent don't work anymore. The particular actors one is whenever you want to phone your agent about a job, and work out whether it's gone away or not. And normally the sort of the lie is, oh, hi, I'm just checking to see if that thing is still, you know, in the mix because my month is really filling up and I need to kind of, you know, get that window cleared. Of course, now there's no such thing as a full month. So you just have to be very honest and say, please give me some work.
So I think we're probably on day 306 of the lockdown.
Feels like it. Yeah. I had 307, but, you know.
Who's counting?
Hey, not me.
But when I speak to anyone at the moment, they seem to be doing one of two things, either making sourdough bread or banana bread or shaving their head. Where are you in this?
I bought some sourdough bread. I don't know if that counts. My girlfriend baked a cake the other night. Mm. But we have twin four-year-old girls. So the sort of the fun stuff is slightly not available to us, or if it is, we have to do it through our children, which is a slightly different experience. I think at the moment the world is divided between people who are finding this whole thing incredibly boring, and people who are finding it incredibly stressful, because you're either looking after young children or you're not, and while it is fine not to have young children, and it's something I frankly envy at this stage, it's you know, the coronavirus is a very different experience when you have kids, because you are truly in their service for 24 hours a day.
I mean, I was going to ask you what your biggest challenge has been, but I guess having to 4-year-old twins.
I mean, to be honest, that was the challenge anyway. It's sort of, even in peacetime, it's a pretty heavy load. But yes, I think sort of now it's all about just keeping them occupied and keeping them from killing each other. And then sort of a few hours a day finding time to work, because I have some sort of projects going on, and it's very hard to know how to make writing happen, frankly, at the moment. Because even if you have an extraordinarily big house or flat and have that sort of corner of the room, I think even in this environment, it's very hard, especially in comedy, to sort of let go of everything that's going on and sort of just, you know, funny time. it's not quite as available at one's fingertips as it was 2 months ago.
Well, yes, I suppose you're, as a comedy writer, you'd be going out, going to pubs, observing people.
Well, there's a bit of that. There's also kind of just, yeah, research in a broader sense. I mean, I'm just embarking on a project now that is about a job that I'm not familiar with particularly, and most people aren't, but it's a kind of really interesting sort of area. And normally you would, you know, set up phone calls or best possibility sort of meet these people, because that's where you really get to know stuff. But you can't do that now. So everything is remote. So whatever you're writing about, you just don't really feel as if you're able to immerse yourself sort of quite as much as one would. And also, I, for instance, with my show Home, I wrote all of that in our local library in Brighton. I love writing in libraries. I love writing amongst people. I don't like writing privately. I like to write where life is going on.
Yeah.
So for me, this is a nightmare, because I have to kind of put on my noise reduction headphones and just kind of pretend that my children aren't there and just sort of, you know, focus. And as a result, I find it very hard to focus. Yeah,
I mean, I remember, I think, the first week of lockdown, and everyone was posting that quote that when Shakespeare was in quarantine from the play, he wrote King Lear. But, and I'm no historian, but I assume he wasn't bothered every 30 seconds to unlock an iPad.
Well, yeah, that is exactly right. That is exactly right. Although I kind of like to think that maybe the Shakespeare in Love kind of version of Shakespeare got quite close to it, that actually King Lear may have been written just amid sort of hangovers and sort of, although he wasn't with Anne Hathaway at the time. Hey, he ran off to London. So he probably didn't really have a sort of relationship to try and maintain. Yeah. God, what a bastard. He had it easy. He had it so easy.
I also think that's the first time anyone has commented that Shakespeare in Love was historically accurate. So,
well, weirdly, I think Shakespeare in Love, I mean, the little I know about him, but I think it weirdly emotionally gets closer to a version of Shakespeare that I believe in than a lot of other films. Because the Shakespeare it presents is this sort of very scatty, a kind of womanizing, chaotic character that Joseph Fiennes does. And I think that gets much closer, a bit like sort of Amadeus did with Mozart, gets closer to sort of what genius may look like than the sort of much more sort of sedate kind of thoughtful kind of middle-aged bard that Stratford sort of sells you. Yeah. I don't know. I always thought Tom Stoppard got quite close there. But maybe I need to rewatch it. I love that film. I want to watch it right now. Such a feel-good film.
It is a really good feel-good film.
And slightly forgotten now. It's slightly forgotten as a film. People don't sort of raise it up. And it's not really a British film, but it has kind of a very British cast. Mm. And for me, it tickles the same ivories as Four Weddings and a Funeral does.
Yes. It was very much of that era.
You know, when British film was kind of winning Oscars and stuff.
We briefly talked about writing, but are you someone that looks at what is happening at the moment and think, boy, I need to write about this?
Generally, no. The last kind of 4 or 5 years has been this show Home on Channel 4 for me. And that is something that responds kind of very immediately to world events and sort of events going on here. But I'm not weirdly at heart a sort of political writer. I don't sort of read the newspaper for ideas, and I'm not inspired by world events generally, but I was in that case.
Yeah.
So maybe I will be again. But the thing I'm writing about at the moment, which I'd love to talk to you about, I can't, it's all sort of under wraps, but it is less of a sort of contemporary sort of satirical sort of shows than Home was. So I guess it just depends. I think a good idea is a good idea. And yeah. I think if most writers were honest, they'd probably say, you know, you sort of get what you're given a little bit. Yeah. Sort of it's whatever story just kind of blindsides you at 2 a.m., you know, when you're just kind of up thinking with insomnia. Whatever sort of hits you as an attractive idea is the one you go for.
I mean, we're bound to get a lot of quarantine-based dramas and comedies next year. That's my fear.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, God, yes. I know. I think the good money as a writer is to do one of two things. Either you go for that, or you do the total opposite and you write something that is completely absurd or completely just in a different sort of world to the one that we find ourselves in at the moment.
Mm.
I think the ones that want to be sort of half in, half out are the ones that probably may not take. But I look at shows as, like, there aren't that many of them, but there are some silly shows on TV at the moment. Like, and by that, I mean brilliantly silly shows, which I think at the moment are the ones everyone will have an appetite for. Things like Statlet's Flats on Channel 4.
Wonderful, isn't it?
Which is brilliant. Mm. And I think everyone was discovering that. But I think sort of in this environment and possibly sort of going forward, that is exactly the sort of show that people will just have a massive appetite for because it's just, it exists in a world that's slightly sideways to our own rather than sort of reflecting anything that's particularly going on. And I think that is a massive strength.
I mean, Adam Sandler's definitely going to do a quarantine-based Netflix comedy.
That's so true. Yeah, in the same tone as Uncut Gems, I think. Sort of shouty, angry Adam Sandler. Yeah, for sure.
Or he'll go back to sort of the mid-90s Adam Sandler. You know, he's been planning to break up with her for weeks. That's been seeing someone else, but then they're suddenly quarantined together.
Yes, or he's quarantined with her and the man he's just caught her having an affair with.
Yeah, who
one
is
of those
Kevin
sort
James?
Of high concepts. Yes, that's right. Yeah, Kevin James. Perfect. Sold.
I mean, I do want to come on to Home shortly, but one thing, as you say, it does reflect impeccably is, you know, Britain today. I mean, Series 2 felt like it was filmed the week it aired because it felt so current.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, yeah. We filmed it in October, November, funnily enough. So actually not that previous to transmission, because we transmitted sort of February, March. And Channel 4, bless them, were very insistent upon that. They kind of said, look, we will try and get it out as soon as possible, because it's one of those shows that if you leave it on the shelf too long, you know, just real events will just sort of overtake it. So, yes, we were very fortunate about that. And we only really took on big subjects like Brexit sort of in certain scenes.
Yes.
one particular scene in that case. But you just kind of had to make sure that when you took on those big subjects, that you did it in such a way that it would be memorable or would sort of outlast the news a little bit. Mm. Yeah. You can't make it too specific. You can't make it, because with Brexit, it was such a moving target. Whatever buzzwords or whatever sort of rumours you were hearing in November were just so hopelessly out of date by February, you know.
I mean, would you touch on COVID-19 and third series? I mean, Sammy and Peter locked in that house for 12 weeks would be spectacular.
Well, we were quite a long way down the road for our Series 3 plans. Mm. And then this hit, coronavirus kind of took hold of the international sort of story, really.
Yeah.
And certainly in the medium term, nothing will be the same again.
Yeah.
It's, without wanting to make sort of cheap comparisons, it's a bit like 9/11,
yeah,
I think, was for American TV, in the sense that American TV had a massive, quite understandable sort of cultural crisis after 9/11 as to do we reflect this? Can we do it tastefully, or do we just simply not?
Yeah.
And I think sort of that is something that every country will have to address in the medium term after this, regardless of mortality rates or anything like that. It's just sort of so many people have lost their jobs, whole industries sort of changed. So for us, it was very weird, because our plans, some of which still hold water, but for a show like Home, you couldn't not address this enormous situation. And so we've slightly kind of pulled back on our kind of story writing for series three. And also, I mean, in the news yesterday, Channel 4 have just pulled £250 million worth of programming. It is quite understandably not in a rush to commission anything right now. So in a weird way, it gives us a chance to just take stock of what's going on. And once the world has sort of returned to some sort of normality, we can all get around the table and work out if there's an appetite for more and what that third series would look like. But already I had a consultant on the show called Hassan Akkad, who is a brilliant man who is a Syrian refugee from Damascus. He came over here about 7 years ago. He won a BAFTA, amazingly, for a documentary he wrote.
Seen that documentary. It's amazing,
He's incredible, and I looked him up soon afterwards. He was living in Stoke Newington, trying to get his stuff off the ground. He became my main consultant and storyteller, really, for Home. A lot of Home is, you know, based on his stories and his thoughts. He contacted us 2 days ago because we're all still really good friends. He is on a COVID ward down in East London, and he's a cleaner. He basically volunteered to be a cleaner on the COVID ward, and is doing just properly heroic work. It's very moving and emotional to see him in those circumstances. And at the same time, with my sort of writer's hat on, you kind of go, well, my God, I mean, there's a story right there. I mean, if Sammy didn't do that, then what else would he do? You know, so it's fascinating to slowly see these stories unfold a little bit, you know, in front of our eyes. And quite knowing how to respond to them in terms of a show, I think it's still up for grabs. You know, as you were saying earlier, you know, there would just be so many crass ways of doing it in terms of sort of, and I'm sure there will be a great sort of, you know, COVID film, you know, comedy probably. But I don't know, you'd just be ticking off the obvious jokes right now. Kind of, it'll take a few months to kind of work out where the real stories are and who the real heroes are in a funny old way, you know, of this. Because it's probably not who you think. So, yeah, interesting.
I read a story, actually, about Hassan. He told you about how he met other refugees through Fortnite. That's crazy.
He did, because I'm not a big gamer, but we had a few sort of references to Fortnite in the second series particularly. Part of that came out of Hassan saying, I don't know if it's just me, but when I play, and he plays the sort of, you know, international sort of everyone in it sort of Fortnite game, the battle royale, loads of them, when he gets talking to them, happen to be refugees. Because as he said, if you're an asylum seeker, you've got a lot of time on your hands because you can't work. So a lot of these guys, if they have access to a computer, will just, you know, while away their time playing games. And we started sort of musing about why that might be. I mean, essentially it's because, you know, Fortnite's a great game, but it's also weirdly because you can walk around in a world you can control. and as an asylum seeker or refugee, you rarely feel like that, you know? So Fortnite is oddly, even though it's a kind of violent world, it's a virtual world where you can change events and you can be in charge of your destiny. And actually the real world for a lot of refugees is a frustratingly powerless one, you know? So that was an example of the sort of thing Hassan would just sort of toss off, and you kind of go, my God, I would never have thought of that. That's golden and very specific. And he was jam packed of sort of really fascinating observations, sort of like that.
And there's that beautiful scene, I think it was in the last episode, where you really look over how Sammy was playing Fortnite. He was just running. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen that game portrayed in as beautiful a way as that.
Oh, that's cool. Funny enough, of all the research I did, humiliatingly, the research into how Fortnite works was some of the greatest, most arduous hours I put in, kind of contacting friends who had sort of sons and daughters who were about 14 and could sort of answer, is it possible to kind of walk around? And in certain gameplay statuses, you know, that you can. And I kind of like the idea of a character peeling off from the fray and just sort of wandering, because actually the the environment's quite beautifully crafted. And, you know, for someone in a certain stage of life, that might be quite nice just to leave the violence and just wander around.
So after doing that research, that didn't sort of encourage you to get back into gaming? Or...
Oh, mate. I made a very definite decision in my 20s. I'm sure I'm older than you, but in my 20s, so late 90s, there was the real sort of explosion of what we'd see as modern games. Things like Medal of Honor and stuff suddenly hit. And I remember a flatmate of mine, good friend, got Medal of Honor. He was really into his computers. And I remember playing Medal of Honor for an afternoon with him. Mm. And it was so immersive and so kind of, it was like a thriller. And you get so emotionally involved that I made a really definite decision never to play it again. Because I can imagine waking up 45, having just played for 20 years, you know, and I just knew it would get in my way as an actor and a writer, and because I'm very addictive as a personality. So yes, I missed out, but my girls are at prime age that basically in about 4 years, I'll be buying them a Switch
each,
and I will be vicariously living through them.
Yeah.
So I do look forward to that greatly.
So if you haven't been playing video games, what have you been doing? Like, what have you been watching these last few weeks?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? I have found myself getting enormously tired in the end of an evening. Simply a mixture of childcare and me and my girlfriend, and then me peeling off to work for a few hours. It's just, it's kind of left my appetite for TV. I'll get into the swing of things, but right now, my appetite is slightly blitzed just because... all our sort of energy levels are just so sort of scattered at the moment.
Yeah.
But one thing my girlfriend and I have really got into is a thing called Unorthodox on Netflix. Mm. Have you heard about this?
No, no.
It's an Israeli show, Israeli-German, but it's a massive phenomenon on Netflix, and it's all about, it's a thriller, kind of, about a 19-year-old girl who is born into a very, very hardcore Hasidic Jewish community in Brooklyn and is sort of imprisoned there a little bit. Everyone else in her community is very happy, sort of in this Hasidic lifestyle, but it's not for her. And she runs away. And she runs away from her husband and her family and takes a plane to Germany. And the community sends the husband and a sort of hard man of the, a sort of like... black sheep of the Hasidic community,
yes,
who smokes and sort of does lots of unorthodox things, off to Germany to find her and bring her back. And the implication is to bring her back by force.
Yeah.
And so it's her trying to discover a new life, but under constant threat that she'll be found by this community.
Oh my God.
And it's brilliant because I didn't know that much. I only knew the headlines of what a Hasidic community looks like and feels like, you know, but this really gets under the skin. And because it's an Israeli show, I'm kind of willing to trust it a little more.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. And it's pretty serious. It's pretty tough. but it's four episodes, 4 1-hours, you know, so it's quite unorthodox. It's quite weirdly unorthodox for a box set, but it means you just rip through it very, very quickly. And me and my girlfriend, because I think that's the other thing with quarantine. You kind of have to find something you both want to watch.
Yes.
Yeah. It feels a bit vulgar to, like, you know, put the kids to bed and then just go to your separate tablets. Yes. And, you know, and I watch a comedy and Phil watches something else. So yes, Unorthodox is something we've really enjoyed.
Mm. Sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. It's a massive breakout hit, even though the headlines of it don't sound particularly wildly popular, you know, or populist, but it's just done really well. I really recommend it. The other thing we've inhaled, like everyone else in the world, is oh God, what's it called? The Tiger King.
Oh yes.
I mean, look, you know, I think after that, nothing. We almost needed a hard bitten thriller because.
Yes.
Tiger King sort of was just so absurd and hilarious and then weirdly moving and for me, it reminded me, even though it's a documentary, it like reminded me of Breaking Bad or one of those American shows that I was very influenced by, that sort of shows you the hilariousness of life, the sadness of life, the everything. And after Tiger King, you go, I don't know where to go, because nothing presses all the buttons like this does, you know?
Yeah, it's a strange, strange show.
Such a multi-hyphenate of a show. It's just sort of so, it's just so everything. And I adored it. And like everyone, it's just, yeah, incredible. And so beautifully put together. It's partly put together, I think, by the guys who did another Netflix show, and I'm going to get the name wrong. Something Country, Wild Wild Country, was that
Oh, yes, I think so,
which was a documentary about a cult in Middle America.
Yes.
And if your listeners haven't seen that, check that out, because that is amazing. And so I think sort of there are some just really hardcore documentary makers in America right now who are just kind of putting out these shows, which are just everything you need from TV right now, basically. Yeah. It's, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly of sort of America, well, you know, the American life.
One thing that's brought me joy in these past few weeks is revisiting Home. I have watched it again. Oh. It's just a tremendous piece of work. I mean, the performances, the writing is impeccable. Obviously, I want to start with you getting naked, which makes me sound a little like your doctor about to check you for coronavirus.
That's right. Well, hang on, where do they swab?
A quick disclaimer for listeners. The current tests for coronavirus do not require you to get completely naked.
There you go.
So if someone in a white coat does ask you to get naked, get out of that branch of Kiehl's immediately. But of course you wrote Home. You could have written this scene in any way you wanted. It could have been on a track day. You had to drive a Lamborghini for reasons. Instead, you chose to get your penis out while waving a plant around while shouting parts of Ireland. Talk me through the reasoning behind that.
Talk me through the process.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very method-based. I have a weird thing. When I write, I sort of conveniently forget that I'm in it. Yeah. I may have to do these things, because if you keep thinking of yourself as an actor when you're writing, it just comes out wrong. It comes out vain, and it just doesn't work. So you sort of, as a writer, you just kind of write the best scene that, you know, you could possibly write sort of in the circumstances. And with this, I thought, well, like we were saying earlier, anything you say about Brexit will probably be quite old by the time it comes out. So another way of doing it is to sort of do a bit of a performance piece, or do something physical, or just do a breakdown, basically, that in some way sums up the anger and fear or frustration that a lot of people on both sides of the argument are feeling. So rather than going for something specific, it was more like, how can I reflect the craziness of where we were at the turn of the year? And that was sort of it. I have, and I don't quite know how this has happened, but I have got naked on television quite a few times over the last few years. And so, and trust me, I'm not that guy, but I just happen to be. I've done quite a lot of work with Julia Davis, and I think sort of with that comes a contractual amount of nakedness, you know, anyone who knows Julia's work. So I am strangely sort of inured to it. I'm slightly immune to it. I still find it stressful. In the moment, I know I can do it. And oddly, it is kind of a cheap gag, but I would argue that male nudity, oddly, is not something you see very much of on TV.
No.
Full nudity.
Yeah.
And I am happy to be at the sort of vanguard of of bringing the willy back. I don't know why. I think I've done a few scenes in my time where I have not had to be naked, but an actress has, for instance. Basically, sort of sex scenes. Mm. And there is always a sort of imbalance there.
Yeah.
And although I think sort of film and TV productions got better, I think it's probably been pretty rubbish in the past at making sort of actresses feel comfortable being naked. And a lot of the time it's kind of unnecessary. And there have been a couple of situations I've been in where, yeah, actresses have just not been well treated in those circumstances. And so I've always sort of thought, well, I don't know, as an actor, there's 50 years probably of not having to be naked, sort of built up now. And I kind of think, well, if we're asking sort of actresses to do that, particularly in this kind of climate now, it feels only right that some men sort of do something similar, which makes me out to be some sort of, you know, suffragette Mother Teresa figure. I'm not. But I sort of, in that situation, the weird good ethics of getting your willy out sort of for a comic scene kind of pushed it to the final draft, basically. Yes. And I'd never write it for someone else. I'd be mortified at sort of writing it for someone else. I'd never ask someone to do that. I'd feel way too conflicted. So if I'm doing it, I feel that, you know, it's on me and I can control that.
I mean, did you at least get a closed set for that day? I mean, it looks like a real office block.
It was a real office. Oh. And it was on the fifth floor and it was a completely glass office as well. And so we did it on a Sunday and there was no one else there, but there was a massive student accommodation building opposite us in Farringdon. And yes, mid frenzy, I did see the curtains twitch and someone sort of wake up at about 10 a.m. to be presented with me. At full force. So to whoever that was, I apologize. Yeah. You can, that's a weird thing. You can only, people talk about locked sets, but weirdly you can't lock a set as much as one thinks one can. Mm. There's always some member of the public, some civilian who just wanders in and wonders what the hell they've, you know, done to deserve this.
Did you find writing the second series more challenging or is it easier once you've set up those characters?
I found it easier. You've set up the characters, and a lot of the to and fro of writing something the first time around is character and working out how they talk. And so in the first series, once you've done that, you learn a lot from the first series. You learn a lot. The first series is quite gentle. It was nice. And I think that was important. And it really broke through for a lot of viewers. And that was nice to have a sort of a comedy that was uncynical. Which was sort of the idea. But then in the second series, I wanted to push that and push the characters into slightly more desperate situations. And so even Sammy, our hero from Damascus, we see him losing his mind and being sort of aggressive at times in ways that we didn't see him before. And seeing me lose my rag and seeing Rebecca Staton. So I think, because you're sort of ticking off things you've done in a first series, the second series, you're kind of looking to push things into sort of possibly more uncomfortable areas. And I think that's probably what we did a little bit of.
I mean, the cast, as you've just alluded to, it is amazing. I mean, Rebecca, like, she can carry a monologue like nobody else. Like, she has so much to say in her speeches. It's just incredible.
Yeah. I always give her the big stuff because... She's always been brilliant, but Raised by Wolves, which was a thing she did with Catlin Moran for Channel 4, really showed her off to have this ability to, basically do a page of dialogue, but not make it look as if she's learnt it, to look utterly spontaneous, and you hang on her every word. She's very, very special sort of on screen. Very hard to do that and maintain interest and stuff. And it was a bit of a superpower she has that... Yeah. We sort of lent into a bit more in series two.
And then since the first series of Home, Youssef has been in absolutely everything.
I know. He was king of TV over Christmas. He was the kind of the weird unsung king of TV. I think genuinely, I mean, he's been working for a long time. He's popped up in a lot of stuff, but he won't mind me saying this, mainly as a terrorist. You know, he has an incredibly vigorous bushy beard that looks terrific when it's paired with an AK-47. So he's done his, you know, strike backs, and he's done his Jack Ryans, and he's, you know, he's played heavies basically a lot. But he in Home, he just suddenly discovered, or we discovered, this incredible lightness of touch that he has, and an amazing sort of gentleness, which I don't think too many people had asked him to explore before. And I think the moment the industry particularly sort of saw him in Home. It was a no-brainer. So he ended up in, particularly over Christmas, he ended up in Gavin and Stacey.
Yes.
He has a beautiful scene with Ruth Jones where he opens the door to her carol singing or something. It was really beautiful. And then he was in Dracula. He sort of bossed that beautiful episode 2 of Dracula. And he was in Baghdad Central, which was a huge Iraq-based thriller for Channel 4, and was, in Home. He wouldn't shut up for about sort of 3 months. And frankly, if COVID gives us anything, it's a break from Yusuf Kakur.
Before I let you back to your normal life of homeschooling and presumably catching up on PE with Joe, if you haven't done it already this morning.
No, I haven't done it. No, I can't do it. Actually, sort of fitness is the one thing I need to reintroduce into my life. We're not up that time, or if we are up that time, we're doing breakfast. And the last thing I want to do is jump around with poor old Joe Wicks. I'm sure I will at some stage.
But there is an American version of Homecoming. Is that right?
Yes, there is. There is. Everything is slightly sort of all over the place right now in the British TV industry and in the American. Yes, Ben Stiller basically saw Home last year and kind of bought it, and it's very exciting. And he is he's a UN ambassador to Syria, and I'm not sure just Syria. I think he spent a lot of time there, but he's more of a refugee spokesperson now. And I think when we hear that from Hollywood stars, there's often a kind of cynical bone in our body that kind of goes, oh, yeah, okay, you know, you're doing it for PR. He's the real deal. He spends most of his year on the road going to Homs and Aleppo and these places I've never been to. You know, he is incredibly grassroots and very passionate, and sort of all he does now. He directs as well. He doesn't act really all that much, but he wants to... we're developing a pilot with him, which he's going to direct. And it's very exciting. And it looks like I'll be co-writing that.
Oh,
and
wow.
We're looking for our co-writer who we want to be American. We want to be of a suitable sort of background. So we're sort of reading scripts and interviewing people. But the basic story is established. We sort of know how I think the US version is going to work, which is very exciting. So I think the moment... that we're allowed to travel, I'll be sort of out there, beginning to kind of put that together with them. So it's really exciting. It's great. Yeah. And I'm also writing a pilot for one of my sort of heroes, actually, which is unfortunately I can't name, but the BBC have tempted back someone who hasn't been on BBC screens for a while, and it's just one of those 5-10 names that you will watch in anything, or certainly I will. And
very
exciting and slightly daunting to come up with a script for him. That will get me through the next kind of couple of months at least.
Rufus, thank you so much for taking the time out today to talk to me.
Cheers, man. Not at all. Stay well.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm dying to know the TV legend who's coming back. Who do you think it is? Do let me know on socials at Quarantine Break. Rufus was such a legend for doing this episode. As you've heard, he's been keeping himself pretty busy with 100 or so projects and homeschooling and everything else. So a huge thank you to him for joining me. This has been episode 2 of the Quarantine Break podcast. I was absolutely blown away by the reaction to episode 1, and I hope you enjoyed this one as much as I did. Please subscribe, share, and why not give me a rating on Apple Podcasts? Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you again very soon, but in the meantime, please stay indoors.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.